All right, why don't we go ahead and get started? I'll call the November 18th special meeting for Ways and Means to order. Amber, could you, or Natalie, whichever, take a roll call, please?
Sure. Archer?
Here.
Ronk?
He's entering right this second.
Right.
Bartels?
Here.
Guevaras?
Present.
Haynes?
Here.
Mayo?
Here.
Walter?
Here.
And Ronk?
Here.
Great. Thank you. All right. Why don't we get started? District Attorney Clegg, you're up first. And the First Amendment we're going to discuss is the receptionist typist.
Yes. So that's a position that someone retired, I think, back in May. And during the pandemic and the effort to reduce costs, we held off hiring a new one. And we thought we could continue that way. But what I have found is that it really is a disruption to the entire office. To have right now, we have different secretaries on different days covering the phone. We need somebody in the front position in the courthouse to address people who are approaching the office. We don't have that person. So as much as I'd like to save more money for the county, I don't think we can function at a professional level without a receptionist. And it diminishes the ability of all the other secretaries to get the work done that is increasing in this office. One of the things I just want to mention is not only have we been understaffed all year, but the caseloads are increasing, virtually doubling in our office. Generally speaking, a felony caseload in this office would be about 40 cases. Right now, we have one attorney who has 148 cases. And part of that's due to the court closure, and part of that's due to the fact we can't have jury trials. But the workload in this office is higher than it's ever been right now. So to function without at least the staff that we started the year with would really hurt us badly and would reduce our ability to do our job. But it's a very important job.
Okay, any questions? Legislator Walter, then Bartel.
Hi, thank you. Is just to clarify, when you had reached out to law enforcement, public safety, discussing a need for a position, I just want to clarify, was it this one or was it the other one? That you said that the paralegals were having to take up the burden of doing a bunch of work. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, so there's a position that we have not filled. We had a paralegal position. We're supposed to hire two paralegals to meet the discovery burden that this office now has. We've never been able to hire one of those paralegal positions. We've, once again, the hiring freeze got in the way of that. We're going to try and make do without that. As I've said many times, the burden of discovery here has increased the workload 20% by itself, not to mention the additional caseload that we have. Only getting one paralegal to meet that obligation was not enough. Everybody in this office has been working overtime to get the job done right now. So we're not asking to fill that position, but we need the secretarial position and we need the receptionist, the administrative assistant, excuse me, and the receptionist position just to possibly manage what we have to get done over the course of the next year.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I realized that we did not move this. Can I get somebody to move this? So I kind of preempted moving this amendment before we discussed it. Okay, great. Thank you. Bartels and then Walter. Okay. Can I ask a question, Dave? This person who retired in May, were these one of the individuals that took the retirement incentive?
I believe we had two people who did that, yes, the receptionist and the secretary.
Okay, and were both positions identified as being filled at that time or not filled?
They were filled at that time, yes.
No, but, There was a list that was submitted back in August or September that told us what positions were going to be filled or not filled. Can we confirm whether or not this was on the list or not? All right, we'll check on that. But we got a list from the exec saying which positions would be filled and which would not. So we just need to double check on that.
Yeah, there was one position. It was the administrative position, administrative assistant position that the exec had cut, and we had not. That had been a miscommunication, I believe, that that was cut. The receptionist was something I had told the executive's office we would try and do without. And as I said, over the last few months, I've realized that we can't.
Okay, any other questions? Legislator Bartels?
Thank you. Well, the district attorney, you just actually answered, I think, one of my questions, because one of my questions was going to be if you asked for it in the budget process. But this one you didn't ask for, but now you realize that you need. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then I was wondering, in terms of the caseload, are you able to provide us those numbers, the different – I mean, I think that's an important thing to consider across all your amendments.
I'd be happy to do that, yes.
Thank you. Thank you. That's an extraordinary increase, just even in that one person you're discussing. So
it is.
And if you could compare it to previous caseloads, that would be helpful. Not just what you currently experience, but how it compares to previously.
Will do.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions, Legislator Ronk?
Thanks. Yeah, Dave, if you could also provide just total number of cases year over year, not just caseload, but the total number of cases.
Okay, so we have cases at justice court level and the county court level. We'd have to go back to the court to get all of those cases to give you those numbers. I can do it fairly readily at the felony level, but in the justice court level, we don't. Statistics had not been maintained on those cases previously.
So my question, I guess, to that is, you know, are your caseload numbers that you're talking about for these ADAs just felony cases, or are they all cases, including justice court?
The worst level is at the felony level. The more serious cases, the most important cases, I think. The justice court level is moving ahead a little quicker than the county court level is.
Yeah.
And so everybody is managing with a backlog, and, you know, court is functioning at a limited basis with one case every 15 or 20 minutes. So those backlogs are going to continue. But the real burden, I think, is because the discovery issues are much larger with the felony cases. And as is the amount of work and investigation that goes into each of those cases. So that's really where the burden has occurred.
No, I understand. My question is, when we get these caseload numbers year over year that, you know, legislators Bartels and Archer have asked for, you know, are they going to show justice court cases as well in those caseloads?
To the extent that we can, you know, we've now digitalized most of the cases in the office so that we now have an ability to tell you what our caseload is presently. That was never done before. So I can't go back and tell you what it was in 2019 or 2018 in the justice courts. What I can do is tell you what the general caseload and the felony cases were previously and what they are now.
Legislator Bartels?
Yeah, I mean, just not to get too far off the budget, but it does kind of circle back in terms of justifying needs for changes and justifying resources to the office. You know, this has been a long-term frustration for me with the district attorney's office. Under the previous district attorney, there were multiple budget cycles where we'd talk about caseloads and types of dispositions of cases. And exactly what you just said, it was acknowledged readily at budget meetings that we didn't keep those records. We had no way to easily identify how many cases were, you know, went this way or that way and what were their initial charges. And so I'm happy to hear that we're starting to digitize, and I definitely would like to talk to you about it offline and through the law enforcement committee about, because I do think it's important for us to be able to look back and to look at the statistics over the course of a multiple years, not just the caseload, but what are the cases that we're bringing to trial? What are the cases? What are the dispositions of cases pretrial? What are the charges being? I mean, it's just, it's important information to help us in so many decisions. So I'm happy to hear that we're starting that transformation.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions on this one? Okay. So let's move on to the administrative assistant. I'll take a motion for discussion on this one.
I'll move it.
Okay, second. Okay. Dave, this is the administrative assistant position that you kind of spoke to. Is there anything you want to add? I mean, you kind of talked about both of them together.
Right. Yeah, we kind of did. This was a position that I could not give up on. I'll just tell you, my office has had the same number of secretaries apparently since the year 2000 as it has right now. Of course, we lost that one. With the workload increasing substantially, with the number of attorneys almost doubling during that time. So the secretarial burden here is very high. And once again, right now, if I had my druthers, I'd ask for another couple secretaries. And I think I put in your in my response to you what they did in Dutchess County when they added the discovery burden. They added ADAs and secretaries and paralegals, and we got one paralegal out of this. So everything has increased the workload of every person in this office in discovery. So we definitely, once again, need the secretary to fill that position to function at a minimal level. Yes.
Legislator Bartels.
And I just want to point out, because in both budget amendments, because the recommendation was zero, you know, we're showing the change as a positive. But again, if you compare them to last year's numbers, which I just pulled up the budget book, the receptionist, imagining partially due to longevity, was at 38,679, now proposed at 29,171. And the administrative assistant was at 51,299, now proposed at 42,643.
Thank you. Right. We're starting at a lower level, and so they'll be saving some money in that respect.
Yeah. So, I think it's important to note.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I think that's important to note.
Mm-hmm. And I just got confirmation that both positions were identified in the incentive program, and they were both identified as to be filled. So where they were defunded was in the budget. But they were originally on the incentive list to be filled. Legislator Bartels.
And again, just to my confusion. So the receptionist you hadn't asked for, did you ask for this administrative assistant in the budget and it was just not provided?
That's right. Yes. That's,
okay. Thank you.
Oh, so the receptionist wasn't. Okay.
The administrative assistant wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Chairman Donaldson?
Lynn, what you're saying is that in the incentive, according to that, these positions were going to be refilled. They were not positions that are going to be zeroed out. But yet, they were zeroed out.
Right. According to the original list submitted to us as to who took the incentive and which positions were they targeting to refill. Bert, I see your hand up. You want to add to this?
Yeah, Lynn, I think we had touched base, too, with that list that was provided. That was during the budget process. So things did change as the budget process went. And I think that was I'm trying to remember the date that was due. But during the budget process, these were kind of late working with the district attorney and things like that. Because originally there was no, besides the one paralegal, there was no reductions in the budget. So this was part of working with the district attorney at the time.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions or clarifications anyone wants to make? Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The TA wants to respond to that at all.
I'm sorry?
I was just curious if the district attorney had any wanted to respond to that. Because so from what I understand, what I just heard was it was originally set to be put back in. But then during the budget process, when working with the district attorney, there was a mutual decision to take it out.
As I said before, the mutual decision on my part was to not go forward with a receptionist and try and make do with the four secretaries that we have. That was the decision that we made. There was a miscommunication about the administrative assistant position.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, let's move on. The next one is the, a technical correction on the, do I have it right here? Sorry, I'm just trying to see. On the paralegal, sorry, yep.
I'll move it for discussion.
Okay.
And I'm assuming this is, we zeroed out a line that someone currently lives in rather than zeroing out the
Yes, that's right. The paralegal position that was hired was actually an investigator. I used it to hire an investigator part-time. And so the wrong number was placed on the zeroed out paralegal position.
Okay, and this is just correcting that?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, anything else on this? Okay, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.
Thank you, everybody. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. All righty.
Okay, bye. Now we're going to move to pump house control unit. So I'm going to move that.
I will move it, Bartels.
Okay, second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. Bert, you want to walk us through what happened here?
Sure, Lynn. It's for the actually the next two and this one, I think at the joint Ways and Means and Capital Project Public Works Committee. I mentioned these three were omitted from the program, and we're just amending that program to add these back in. Each, you know, the pump house, we described, you know, talked about each one, and I will say of the three, one is established already, which would be the DSS basement restoration project. So
and that
I
one
know,
was held up. That one was held up due to COVID.
Right, and you know, Lynn, each one of these were part of the 2020 program, but we did kind of pull the brakes on any new, you know, unless it needed in terms of capital projects. So now these are part of the 2021 program, or in this case, amending that program.
And the only one that we had spent prior money on was the DSS basement.
Correct. Yeah, that has an established capital project already. Yep.
Okay. Any questions? Legislator Walter?
I assume we could talk about any of these three kind of when we're talking together.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was originally emergency management was going to be moved into the sheriff's office, I believe it was like $1 million more. Can you just talk about, I mean, it's the good news that it would be a million less, but just what in essence makes this that much less expensive?
Yeah, in terms of there would be more work done at the law enforcement center to basically fit the 911 kind of operation there. You know, where buildings and grounds and such, I don't know in terms of the architecture and things like that, but having the space already kind of molded at DSS, there isn't as much construction as needed in terms of that as there would be at the law enforcement center.
And can you just also, the decisions around not doing it at the law enforcement and doing it here, what kind of benefits that we have for that?
I think it really comes down to the cost.
Okay.
We're saving that $1 million because of the infrastructure and, you know, like I said, less construction would be there.
Okay. Legislator Bartels.
So looking at, again, following on the same project, looking at it, it doesn't show previous money spent.
No, not Legislator Bartels, this was just, we haven't established this one yet. It's the next one. The DSS basement restoration is the one we
established. Oh, okay. Okay.
No problem. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry. So for this one, has the decision to move it into this space, and again, I get the estimated financial mm-hmm. cost, but were there conversations with both departments about sort of programmatic efficiencies that might be felt by putting them under the same roof?
In terms of with the sheriff and at yes. the law enforcement, I think that was kind of the discussion in the beginning, but I think the ultimate factor was in terms of the cost. It was $1 million and it could be more per se in terms of that.
And it's just, it's office space and the communication center itself.
Correct. Yep. And as the, in the description, they are going to get the, some of the equipment off a grant, which was part of another capital project, 482.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's the equipment is 482?
Yes. Yeah. I think it was part of a grant project through 911, Lynn. I'd have to look to see what that title was.
Okay. Legislator Bartels?
Can I just ask, on the DSS basement flooding, have we contained the flooding, and did the investigation confirm where it's coming from?
Yeah, I believe at one point this could have been a lot more. So that initial 31,000 got to the estimate to complete that to the 250. Because originally, I think that this could have been a real problem in terms of a more expensive problem. So that initial 31,000, we've contained it, and now the additional 219 for next year should resolve this.
So we have the report.
Yeah, you know, in terms of DPW, I would think so. I can definitely get that to you.
Okay.
But I know that's what the initial 31,000 identified.
Great. Thank you. It would be good if we could get that report.
Yeah, I'll get that for you. Yep.
Okay. Any other questions? Legislator Guevaras?
I'm just struggling to understand what would be needed to be done at the jail that would require an additional $1 million worth of renovations for the 911 center. I mean, I've been to the 911 center numerous times. I can't imagine that. I mean, there's some of the infrastructure is already at the sheriff's department because of the dispatching nature that they do as well.
I think it had to do with the space that was available. There had to be more construction in terms of that. I think a lot of it also had to do, it really did have to do with what space they were going to utilize. There would have to be more movement within the sheriff's department to use it.
Well, when was this evaluation done?
Pre-COVID.
So was it also done pre-bail reform?
This was like 2019.
So it was done pre-bail reform?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So bail reform has changed a lot of things the way we operate.
But this isn't in the jail. This is at the law enforcement center and kind of the operations where the sheriff's department is located.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But there could be things, maybe we can play musical chairs here with the department. I don't know. I just see there's a better synergy in my mind with the sheriff's department than DSS. I don't know.
I have Legislator Ronk and then Bartels.
Yeah, thanks. I believe that where this was going to be located, they were planning on putting a kind of a mezzanine in the rotunda and then putting it there, kind of above where the current sheriff's department dispatching operation is. Honestly, the area that's available in the sheriff's department dispatching area, there's not enough room for, you know, putting an extra one or two dispatchers, let alone, you know, four or five during a really big, influx of calls, like say a tropical storm or something of that nature. I understand what you're getting at, Legislator Guevaras, and I guess, you know, I think the most important thing, at least from, you know, members of the Law Enforcement Committee from last year, we went and did a tour of the communication center. You know, it's already larger than the area they would have at the law enforcement center, and they are just out of space. You know, I understand the synergies would be there. You know, and I wish that we could all go back in time and fight the battle harder with Art Snyder, who was the director of emergency management at that point when they were building the jail and they were going to build space for the 911 center. And Art fought against it, and it did not move forward. You know, but I think as it is, we need to make the most effective and safe space for these dispatchers. You know as well as a fellow first responder that, you know, they have a tough time up there at the 911 center from time to time. So, I respect where you're coming from, but I think that the best opportunity that we have here is to use – you know, the space that we can, you know, best craft for them to be able to do their jobs.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. You know, I hear and I respect both of what you're saying, particularly since Legislator Ronk on the committee in the previous year did the tour of that facility, and I think understands the space at both of the other facilities. And yet I go back to, you know, the early days of looking at the jail and space analyses that were done then and resistance to putting more departments into that building. And I really feel that the space at the law enforcement center in the non-jail side, in the sheriff's side, is overbuilt and underutilized. And that's from day one. That's not to this sheriff, that's to design elements and lots of offices. So I mean, I personally would like to have a conversation, I don't mean privately, but through the law enforcement committee with the existing sheriff again about utilization of the space. And I really think we should have some, you know, some kind of neutral study done to analyze space, I mean, across the county, but particularly in that building.
Legislative Walter, then Ronk.
This somewhat gets off track of these three particular resolutions, but just to inform you that I certainly, and I'm not suggesting this is a full utilization of the space, but during COVID, they have used that space for virtual arraignments, and there is discussion about having a centralized arraignment located in that, just so that you're aware that there are conversations about other uses right now.
Thank you.
Legislator Ronk.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've you know, got an emergency operations center at the law enforcement center. I mean, I guess my question to Legislator Bartels is, are you suggesting that we continue to look into utilizing space at the law enforcement center for the 911 center, or are you talking about utilization of the space overall?
I'm more talking about utilization of the space overall, but I don't know what investigation's been done already into how much space the 911 center is going to need, how much they're currently utilizing, and how much could be available without construction, because I can visualize what you're talking about, a build out over the rotunda. I mean, I think I could imagine that would be costly. So I haven't seen any reports on what analysis has already been done. But I mean, I'm hearing conversation that it's been done.
Legislator Ronk.
Thank you. I respect where you're coming from and understand what you're talking about overbuilt and underutilized. I don't necessarily disagree with either of those statements. You know, but one thing we have to remember about the law enforcement center, you know, and particularly about, you know, the 911 center operation is that there's a lot of equipment that goes into that. So any build out of the 911, you know, for the 911 center is going to involve a lot more building than people, I think, you know, lay people would really realize, you know, when it comes to the communications equipment, redundancies, everything that goes along with operating a 24-hour emergency communication center. And you know, one of the benefits of the BRC is that it's basically open space. So we can do a lot of things there that we can't do in a place like the law enforcement center that's not just plain open space.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, so I guess we tackled all three of these, Bert. Thank you. All right, next we have the assistant county attorney. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Okay.
So as you can see in the provided backup, this position in last year's budget was funded at a level, which is the adjustment we're making. And prior to the hiring of the previous person in this position, outside of the budget process, the position salary was raised without legislative consent. It was then confirmed through the budget process, but the position is now vacant. So I'm proposing that we put the position back to the salary that existed pre-executive change to the and to the line.
Any questions on this?
Vacant currently.
Pardon me?
I'm just reiterating, it's vacant currently.
Bert?
Sorry, you're on mute.
I unmuted, sorry. Just for informational purposes, in terms of the attorney departments, in terms of the DA, the public defender's office, and the county attorney's office, if you look at the salaries there, the county attorney's office is the less in terms of the salaries, and this is the first kind of assistant county attorney. So I just wanted to point that out to the committee, and just to be aware, if you compare some assistant DAs, and I'm not saying in terms of the work and the difference, just the county attorney's office is the lowest in terms of the comparisons between those three departments.
Legislator Walter can go first.
Okay. How long has this position been vacant?
I feel like, I don't know exactly, Bert might know, a couple months?
Yeah, it's a couple of months. I mean, I could take a quick look to find a report, but I think it was September.
And was this related to the retirement?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Legislator Bartels.
Yeah, I just want to, on the title, that the first time I heard the title first assistant county attorney was when I questioned the change in the salary that happened outside of the budget process, not to the commissioner of finance, but to a member of the executive team. And that's the first time I heard that title. That's not the title in the book. So again, this was a salary change that happened outside of the budget process and arguably outside of executive power, because the legislature sets the salary and salary range, and this set the salary outside the range that the legislature had set. Yet we did confirm it through a budget process, but there was a person sitting in that line. It would have been harder to take money away that had been given to that person. I'm proposing that we just bring it back to what it was prior while it's vacant.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, let's move on to raises. Move for discussion, take a motion.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second?
Second.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
Since it's in under my name, if I can just explain, and this is going to be the same in the coming resolution. So I've had conversations with various legislators over the course of this budget process, and there's been expressed concerns about the raises proposed in this budget. I've broken it up, and these are straight raises. And rather than get into one or the other, every raise that was proposed is in this resolution. So I expect that over the course, it may happen right now, but over the course of the next couple of days, we may be hearing from various departments or different legislators may have different items. I mean, I've spoken in support of one of these raises, strongly in support of one of these raises over the course of years, but I also think this is an extraordinarily difficult year. I'm just in terms, because I want to be on the record, this is not to say that I don't think that people within the organization, and I'm going to, you know, I'll be saying this again, don't work extraordinarily hard. I just know that in the private sector and across this county, people are experiencing extreme difficulty. And so the proposal is to pull back on all the raises. Again, I'm open to the discussion, but I put this in as the beginning discussion point as a fiscally conservative move.
Legislator Ronk.
Thank you. There are several of the raises that are listed here that I don't agree with, but there are several of the raises here that I do agree with, and I don't think that the holistic approach is the way to go. I think that there are several salary increases in here that are based on changes in work schedule. There are grade changes in CSEA. I think that raises, some raises, and specifically the ones I think that have been focused on, you know, the $20,000 plus raises in the county executive's office, I think, you know, drew the light on this. And I think those are some of the ones that I would be in favor of eliminating. I can't support this amendment as it sits because, you know, I mean, we've got one of our own legislative employees in here who's going to a higher hour level, who is working more hours than, you know, than she's getting paid for right now. And, you know, and those are due to directly duties that she has been doing this year to make sure that we continue to operate properly during a pandemic. And I think that some of these other salary increases are similar to that. So I think when you paint with one broad brush, you really pick up a lot of things that don't belong in a discussion about exorbitant raises. I'll tell you that, you know, it disappoints me that this is the way it was done, because I think that in my caucus, there's a lot of votes against, you know, some of the larger, you know, $10,000-$20,000 raises. I'll go back to this. I've said this, you know, if I've said this once, I've said it 100 times. You know, we are the hardest on our own staff. We are the hardest on ourselves. We're always the most fiscally conservative when it comes to ourselves. And here we are, you know, telling essentially through this amendment one of our employees, thanks for doing all that extra work, but oh well. Including, you know, this Zoom meeting is I think, courtesy of that particular employee, you know, his hard work and discipline to be able to, you know, make it so we can meet virtually and have these discussions and stay safe and healthy.
Legislator Chair Donaldson and then Legislator Bartels.
Yes, I think I mean, in defense of the legislator Bartels, I think she's putting these in, and I believe that they can be broken out, and I think they should be broken out. I agree with Leader Ronk that they be broken out and to individual ones, because I mean I agree that, you know, using a broad brush, you know, isn't the best way of doing this. So I think if it's broken out with reasoning for each one of them, you know, before we actually vote on it, I think it would be helpful.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. I'm absolutely open to breaking out each one. That's fine. I mean, the resolution that's before us now doesn't include any of the hour changes. That's in a later resolution. But I'm open to breaking them out as individual lines or as individual departments and taking them however the committee wants to handle them. I know we're not going to vote on them today. like I said, there are certain people even within here, not people, but positions that I support the raise, but I also wanted to provoke the conversation. And I can say without naming names that I have spoken to legislators who said that they would not support the budget if any raises at all were in them. So, and that was expressed specifically to me as attributable to our changes or to straight salary increases. So, you know, this is a conversation starter. And again, I'm open to how we handle it moving forward.
Legislator Ronk.
Thanks. Sorry, Legislator Bartels. I was looking at both of your amendments, but the backup to all of them is in the middle. So that was what confused me there. So I think we can discuss both of these at the same time since the backup relates to both of them.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. I just was clarifying.
Legislator Cahill.
Thank you, Chairman Archer. I just want to discuss a couple of things about the CSCA raises. We'll have five of our collective bargaining agreements expired in a month and a half from now. And selectively giving certain CSEA position raises without giving everybody in CSEA a raise is kind of, in my opinion, a backdoor way of doing it. And it's unfair to the people who aren't selected for raises, whether you're specifically in the comptroller's office where they're increasing the hours for four CSEA positions. That's basically just giving them a raise, right? And, you know, to me, that's unfair to the rest of the people in the collective bargaining because they don't have that same opportunity to have their hours increased by their department head or their elected, right? And so for me, I think that anytime we're addressing salary increases, what I'll consider a backdoor salary increase of that nature, we should really think long and hard about it and how that affects the rest of the people that are, in fact, covered by the very same collective bargaining agreement that those people who are getting increases are. And for that reason, I think that, you know, we really need to take a hard look at all of these hour shifts, job changes, and all of that. It's grossly unfair because at the end of the day, we're going to have maybe 6 or 10 CSEA employees out of all of them who are going to get salary increases based on a grade change or an increased hours. And that is grossly unfair to the rest of the people in this salary, in the collective bargaining agreement.
Legislator Bartels.
Legislator Donaldson, Chair Donaldson had his hand up first. Did you?
I'm sorry. I didn't see it. Chair Donaldson.
That's all right. I mean, when you're increasing the time, it is a slippery slope because it's been used a number of times by department heads in order to get their people raises, and that's always a concern with mine. But at the same time, if somebody really is working longer hours, they do deserve that money. And COVID has required some to work longer hours and some have had the luxury of working less hours. So, I mean, it's not an easy fix necessarily, but like I said, it's a slippery slope when you use that increased hours times. Also, the idea, you know, I don't really consider it a raise if there is a real change in title. If somebody moves up into another position because somebody left, that's a title change that the person is entitled to the higher wage because they're doing a different job. And it would be, if it was appealed, then they would win in that appeal in order to and get the money anyway. So, I mean, that's something that needs to be looked at closely. I mean, if it's just a title change for the sake of making a title change, but they're doing the same amount of work or doing the same job, then I don't agree with that. That's nothing more than a raise. But, I mean, we have to look at those, and each one of them individually in order to ascertain if they should have the increased salary or not.
Legislator Bartels, then Cahill.
Thank you. Yes, so you know, I probably should have led with this, thanking Amber Feaster for all her work putting this amendment together, because you can see it involves an incredible amount of detail and an incredible amount of backup. And in assessing those title changes, we tried to leave out anyone that was due to a desk audit, but it is going to require that individual look about what exactly brought about the title change. With regard to the increased hours, I mean, I would also, and I appreciate the comments that I've heard from my fellow legislators thus far, but I would also say that if there's a need for increased hours due to COVID, there are other ways to handle that, including alternative work schedules, which, yes, would require budget to provide for that, but permanently changing hours is a difficult thing to undo. I mean, it's easy in that we can just pass a resolution taking it away, and we're about to come across my next resolution, which takes money away, but it's not so easy. It's very hard to get the political will to do that. And so, you know, I would submit that if there are circumstances within some of these lines that are changes in hours due to COVID, that we should make or consider a temporary dispensation for that in terms of providing for funding for temporary alternative work schedules.
Okay, Legislator Cahill, then Ronk, and then Commissioner Gulnick.
Thank you. So on Dave's point and on Tracy's point, I agree with both of you. The thing that, you know, what Dave was talking about with Tracy saying, there are alternatives to giving people a permanent solution for a temporary problem. And that's what we're talking about here in some of these cases. And one of them is, I believe the contract says you can pay them overtime, or they have the option of taking compensatory time. There's more than one way to address this. And if we're really talking about a temporary problem, which we all hope and pray is a temporary problem, COVID, especially now that we're hearing more and more about vaccines, then we shouldn't really be solving this with a permanent solution by increasing the job hours or bumping up a title because that person's been working longer hours, right? In some cases, there are legitimate requests for those jobs to be addressed individually. And I think that that's something that, you know, we will consider, obviously. But I just think overall, we have to be really, really cautious. And when we're thinking about, you know, doing permanent things like basing the job by increased hours or bumping up the title, something like that, we really should consider the alternatives that are in place today to solve those problems. They're short-term problems. We don't need permanent solutions for short-term problems.
Legislator Ronk.
Thank you. So I should say that, in response to what Legislator Bartel said about hours, permanent, non-permanent, in our office in particular, and it's, of course, just one of the positions with the more hours, but it's the one that I'm, I think, most qualified to speak about. I can tell you that it's not just COVID that, you know, causes the need to move up the hours of the deputy in the position. The previous, I think, four chair people, the legislature, yourself included, had a confidential secretary who was, you know, and they're different people in the position, but had a confidential secretary that was able to operate as a sort of part-time deputy, you know, clerk, you know, in addition to the deputy clerk that exists, and do office responsibilities for the legislature, not just for the chair of the legislature. I don't believe that that's Dave's vision for the confidential secretary, nor should the chair of the legislature be required to operate in that manner. So I think this would be another few hours a week where the deputy clerk could pick up some of those duties that are currently not being handled by the confidential secretary, who had previously for, I mean, pretty much the last, 10 years, been operating as an additional deputy clerk and performing job responsibilities for the whole legislature. That's not happening now.
Commissioner Gulnick, And then Legislator Walter.
Yeah, I just want to point out, you know, when we were comprising this budget and we were working with the departments, you have to remember the departments were also losing positions when it came to retirement incentive or defunding these positions. Some of them were higher titles. And, you know, we tried to work with the departments to make it as efficient as possible. That's why there is increased hours. There is increase in terms of title increases within the departments because, you know, that jobs that were removed, that work still has to be done. And it can't, you know, you have to also keep within the civil service side of things where that work can be done. So the kind of combination working with the departments of, you know, salary increases, hours, and those title changes all were part of the budget process to make it as efficient as possible without raising taxes, I might add.
Legislator Walter.
I agree with what Legislator Cahill said. I think Legislator Ron kind of alluded to of that we need to look at these as a case-by-case basis because sometimes an hour increase might be for one reason, for COVID, sometimes it's not. I do, for what it's worth, we had this interesting situation with the district attorney wanting to increase hours or actually have a decrease hours but salary increase because what was pointed out from within was having increased hours is actually more hours towards retirement, and so there's not equality there. And so I think that's an interesting, you know, thing that we need to recognize what happens when you increase hours. But I mean, are we going to proceed to take these apart now and look at the ones separately? Because I think what everyone's saying is it's a little bit different for each of these sections and that it's probably worth doing that work.
Yeah, because I think what we have is we have raises, then we have another with increased hours, but our conversation kind of meshes it all together and we can't distinguish where the objections are.
Right, sorry, and I have one more thing is that, yeah. You know, that slippery slope between using the retirement incentive and saying there's no backfill, but then kind of subtly backfilling, but because you're saying, because we had this, you know, we've lost this position, so now this person is doing more. I think sometimes that's very true. I mean, we just heard from the district attorney that the implications of losing positions because of retirement, but I don't think it's carte blanche okay to say we lost these positions because of retirement, so therefore we need to pay someone else more, because that was the concept of that retirement incentive. Like, if it's, there's the question of, like, if you give someone 100% increase or 200% increase, that's a pure backfill. And then what if it's 50% more? Or what if it's 20% more? And so where does the line draw where you're actually kind of subtly, I mean, I know it's not literally backfill because it's the same person, but I just think I'm not comfortable with always using that argument that says we lost this person because of retirement, so therefore someone else should deserve to have a raise or whatever. So, and again, it depends on the person and the job.
Before you answer, Bert, I do have one question and you can incorporate it in your response is, you know, we have, as far as I've heard, I have not heard that the promotion freeze, the increase freeze, the change in hour freeze, I haven't heard that that's been rescinded. And yet, you know, we have all of this showing up in the budget. So either we continue to have a freeze that had been, I think it was May that you put the memo out on behalf of the county exec. I'd like some clarification, which I haven't gotten, is that still in effect or not? Because I look at this budget and to me, it says it's not in effect anymore. So we think we're out of the water and we're moving into 2021 with no issues. I respectfully ask the question. So
sure. And I understand that. And that freeze, you know, was for this year as we kind of comprise this budget. That's why our payroll is down. If you look at the budget, it's $5.8 million down. That is a loss of positions. I mean, I understand Legislator Walter in terms of the positions being vacant and filled, but a lot of those alternative work schedules and title changes are as a result of a position being defunded or that position's being removed. So there is a difference, and I understand where, you know, like the district attorney is filling one of the positions at entry level. I'm saying there's positions that are completely vacant and being defunded where the department has to fill in for that work.
So do we want to go through each of the resolutions and go through the list and comment, or, you know, or does everyone want to take an opportunity to kind of review it? So I leave that to the committee. Legislator Ronk.
I think that we should, yeah, we've had a good overall discussion. I think that we should, you know, we've got another meeting tomorrow. We've got another meeting on Tuesday. I think that we should all take some time, make our own notes, and then, you know, go from there. If we want to vote on each position individually, that's something we can do. You know, I have less issues with some of the ones in the first resolution than I do in the second resolution.
Okay. Does that sound agreeable to everyone to get a chance to digest it and then come back to the table with comment? Chairman Donaldson, you had something?
Yeah, I think, and if you could break it out by each position, and you maybe just throw one page together with each position, and then we could look at the backup, you know, comparing with that. So I can actually, if I have a list and says this, you know, these nine positions, and I see the list and I do the backup, then I can check off whether I support that or not.
And they are individually identified here, Chairman.
I mean on one page.
Legislator Bartels. Oh, sorry. Legislator Gavaris and then Bartels.
I just wonder if it's possible for anybody who has thoughts, though, if they could put in a brief narrative on each one that they feel passionate about. If they want to send us an explanation, that would be helpful as well, to a reason for justifying these ones.
Okay, Legislator Bartels.
Yeah, I was going to also, I'm fine taking this however the committee wants to take it, and I expected that it was going to be broken up, but I would suggest that rather than thinking, there's some logic to it, you know, for example, when you look at, I mean, the comptroller's here. When you look at the changes in the comptroller's office, they're all similar changes in the office. So you could look at that grouping together. Same thing, Commissioner of Finance is here. In the Commissioner of Finance's office, there are several. These are both cases where we're talking about changes in hours attributable to the change in salary across multiple positions. And so I think probably a logical way to look at them are department by department in like changes, and then if there are exceptions to that or if we need to pull it, but I think it would be very unlikely that you'd want to identify one line out of multiple that have been treated the same by a department head. So, and again, I think it's pretty logical when you look at it. Amber did a great job sort of breaking them out, and that's partially why I asked that they be done in this way, in the straight raises versus the hour changes versus the title changes. The title changes were the most confusing to me personally, but I just felt like at least this way you could see the different ways that they were handled across departments and sectors within the budget.
Commissioner Golnick.
Yeah, Tracy, I agree. I think the best way to look at it may not be for each scenario, but as a department, you know, you brought up, you know, the comptroller and even my office, where I you know, the title increases as well as the alternative work schedule. So maybe even by department may be helpful for the committee. Just a suggestion.
All right, we'll take a look, but I mean, I think you've got it. I would suggest everybody review the amendment and look at that in more detail. If there's questions, I'm sure Natalie and Amber can help answer them, but let's see if we can work through it the way it's done without having to regurgitate everything all over again. Because it's a lot of work that Amber and Natalie put into getting this done. And I just want to make sure we, you know, use it and see if we can work with what we have before we do another scenario. If everyone could try that. If there's something that pops up, please let us know and we'll try and accommodate. But I think that if you look at and spend some time digesting each of the different amendments, it really breaks it out, and then we can talk about that in more detail. Okay? All right, so, boy, we're moving right along here. Chairman Donaldson, we're at community action.
No, you missed one.
What did I miss?
The 2%.
2%.
Reduction.
Sorry. We talked about raises, hour increase, and title changes, but we did not speak about management non-union cut. Is that correct?
Yes. I'll move it for discussion.
Okay, second. Gavaris. Okay. Go ahead. Yep.
So I know that this is this is a tough one. I oppose the 2% raise that was proposed as a budget amendment by members of the legislature last budget cycle. But it passed. And in the previous budget cycle, the then relatively new exec put in a 2% raise for all management positions that was applied as well. So we had two 2% raises over the course of a short period of time. You know, just speaking in terms of pulling back on last year's raise, I feel that this is, you know, critical importance. Again, it's tough to ask to take money back from people, and I don't mean this as any reflection on the work and the important and dedicated work that our management staff is doing. But again, I'm going to talk about the private sector for a second, and just, you know, within my personal world and people I talk to in the private sector, I know people that have been asked to take 20% pay cut, 30% pay cut, so it's two separate people, and asked to work the same amount of hours, not asked, like they would lose their job in the private sector if they didn't take this pay cut. I know people that have been furloughed. I know people that have been fired. I know people whose businesses, which are relatively new and are longstanding, are going to shutter for good and are shuttered now. And I also know that people are having a, you know, difficult time in terms of paying their property taxes and making ends meet. And we're hearing about programmatic cuts that are in contract agencies and otherwise. I don't know what we're headed into, but I strongly fear we may face layoffs in this coming year. I think this next budget cycle is going to be worse. And again, in opposition to the previous 2% cut, I think that this is something that's necessary in the budget. I don't know if it's going to get support. I can say that I asked to give myself a 2% cut, even though I didn't get a 2% raise, and was told that I can't do it in this resolution, that it would have to be through local law. And I feel like changing one legislator's salary, despite the fact that multiple other legislators said, okay, put me in two, but changing that salary on a temporary basis would be a problem. I will say that if this does pass, I will take a 2% cut and will donate that money somehow. I have to figure out and look into how that would happen, but I was told I cannot put it in the budget, or my salary line would have been in there as well.
I think, Ron, since you're the vice chair, you can pick on yourself.
No, I was just going to wait for Len to get back.
Yes, I apologize. The dog had to go out.
No worries.
When they have to go out, they go out.
I was about to call on myself, but I'm
waited. Sorry, I should have said that, but I thought I could get it done while she was still talking. Thank you. If it happens again, please step in.
You were okay. Done, right, Trey?
You're finished. Any other comments, Legislator Ron?
Thank you. You know, I am wholly and totally opposed to this particular amendment. You know, I think that you know, quite frankly, a lot of the management employees, the non-union employees here, are the ones who have been working the hardest during COVID-19. Many of them have volunteered at the COVID hotline, spent hours and hours at the emergency operations center, and in particular, our staff have all been working harder. We've had more meetings than we've ever had because of the ease in setting up the meetings and the ease in attending the meetings. But all of that ease that we have in attending these meetings provides a lot more on the back end for our staff. And what's particularly insulting to me personally about this, taking away 2% from all management employees is that there are several employees in the executive's office who are not mentioned in your removal resolutions.
I can't hear you anymore, Legislator Ronk, and I really do want to hear you.
We lost sound, Ken.
Ken, we lost sound.
He knows. He's talking anyway. I can't read lips, though. Sorry about that.
Now. Can you hear me now?
Oh, now we can.
You're back.
We can thank Spectrum. It told me my connection was unstable. Where did I get lost?
You said about the executive's office that several were not there.
Thank you. Yeah, several of the raises in that have happened over the last year and a half in the executive's office, including Assistant Deputy County Executive Torres, who got almost a 20% salary increase immediately after the county executive took office, which he still has. The current chief of staff and director of research, I'm not even sure what the title turned into, in the county executive's office, who got a large raise and who, by the way, makes more money than anybody on our staff except for Vicky. Including both of our budget analysts, CPAs, deputy clerk of the legislature. So again, I really think that this, it goes against, all of the hard work that our staff has done and that other people in management non-union have done. I understand your point of view on this, Legislator Bartels. And I understand that we're in tough times, but I don't think that you handle tough times by, taking away something that was given to all of these employees and then have worked hard through the pandemic. I understand your reasoning. I just don't whatsoever agree with it.
Legislator Bartels.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your comments, but I just want to, on a clarification note, I didn't know what you meant about what's insulting, because I asked for every management employee to get a 2% cut. So if that's not what's reflected in what's drawn up, I asked for every management non-union employee to get a 2% cut. So I will look at that, because that's definitely what I want reflected.
Chairman Donaldson.
Can I just respond to that real quick?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Ken.
Just as a clarification, Legislator Bartels, every management person is getting a 2% cut, but these positions that got these $20,000 increases, 2% is being cut off of their $20,000 higher salary. My point of view is that this wasn't I was sort of alone on an island and insulted and told that I had a political vendetta and whatnot when I was going after what I thought was legitimate, inappropriate increases. And, now everybody from, the lowest paid person in management, everybody from a confidential secretary to, a fiscal analyst and, finance, deputy finance director, everybody's going to get the same decrease except for, these other ones who, folks didn't have any problem with, last year and in the past, 12 months, are getting, these exorbitant increases minus 2%. So I wasn't saying anything about it not being, it is equal. I just don't agree with it.
Thank you. I thought you were saying it wasn't equal. Thank you.
All right. Chairman Donaldson and then Legislator Walter.
Yeah, well, I voted against those that raised in the first place. But having said that, it was put in place by the legislative body. I have a great deal of reservations about the idea of taking away something that was given to the, you know, these management people. And as a result, I can't support that. The idea of reducing the legislature's salary by 2%, we are already the lowest paid legislative body in the state. I don't think that makes sense, doing things of that nature. So, you know, we can say if you know, people want to give up their salary, that's fine. But, you know, that goes back to ancient Greece that they paid people to be representatives because otherwise only the wealthy would serve. And then it would be just an oligarchy of the wealthy. So that's why you do pay legislators. And it has to be enough to get people to want to do it that it's able to, you know, let's face reality. It's a second job for many. And as a result, you know, they count on that. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing that you get more people to run. Otherwise, it would be done only by the very wealthy. So I don't support any 2% reduction of the legislative body either.
Legislative Walter, then Bartels, unless you want to respond.
I just want to, I hear Legislator Donaldson, and I'm well aware of what our legislators make as opposed to other legislators in the region. And I was not and will not be proposing a 2% cut to the legislative salary. I was saying that if this passes, I will take a 2% cut in order to practice what I'm preaching. That's me personally. I just could not, there was no way to put a single line for a single legislator in this resolution. That's what I was told. And so I will, if this passes, I will effectuate that somehow, but I'm not talking about putting a cut to all legislators. I also want to point out that legislators didn't get the, no elected got the 2% raise in the last cycle. So, so I was just speaking about me personally. I was not talking about making a cut to the legislators.
Legislator Walter.
Yeah, thank you. Just a couple of things. I'll go backwards. I will say that when COVID first started, and I think I spoke to Legislator Haynes and maybe others, I did propose that the legislature take a cut. Nobody supported. Well, nobody vocally, a few people privately supported, but nobody outstandingly supported. I still support that idea, even if it's a temporary cut during COVID, but just putting that out there. I guess it's a question towards in response to Legislator Ronk. I mean, I think that some of the positions you mentioned are expressed in other sections, other positions that have larger increases. I imagine that those, I don't know if he hears me, will come up in other sections. I mean, a couple of them that you mentioned, I know are in one or two, you know, at least one other place. But I just wonder, because I haven't seen what tomorrow's list is, did you, just wondering if there were positions that you're proposing from the executive's office that might be showing up tomorrow to reflect that concern that you have? I don't know if you heard me.
Legislator Ronk, are you still with us?
I am. Was that directed at me, Legislator Walter?
Yeah, it's a question. I was just curious if we were, if those were sort of in the docket for tomorrow, some of the concerns you have of beyond the 2%, you know, people who you felt, or positions you felt that are overpaid.
I don't. I mean, I put up the one last year when I think that we had the opportunity to do it because it was the first budget that was going to be passed with, assistant deputy county executive's position being, you know, 19% higher than the previous year. It was at first it was done outside of the budget process and it was widely opposed. So I hadn't planned to put that up again because, you know, I'm not a, you know, at this point, it's been budgeted for. You know, one of the things I wanted to say I'll finish this. I'll finish answering your question first, and then I'll go to the next one. The other position is the chief of staff slash research. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't believe that is in either of the resolutions that reduce salary increases, because technically it's not necessarily a salary increase. It was a combination of two positions. I'm not sure if the communications fiscal analyst position is in there either. Either Amber or Natalie, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that one. But I don't believe the chief of staff is.
So I guess what I'm saying, the reason why I bring it up is, and I don't know, this is my first rodeo here. I certainly expressed to the executive wondering about where that office was cutting their fat and the whole concern that everybody needs to do more with less. And I asked specifically when we had the meeting with the Democratic Committee caucus with him, that very question of how is that going to happen, and got an answer that says I'm staffed as I need to be staffed. I know I'm personally open to the consideration that department could use, some trimming. So I'm just putting that out there.
I mean, I'll be honest. The reason why I didn't put in amendments like that is because last year, I was, personally attacked by members of the legislature on behalf of the executive's office and by the executive's office themselves, personally attacked in press releases about one or two amendments that I had chosen to make about what I thought was incorrect spending in that office. And I believe a couple of the legislators who are, standing behind these salary decreases are some of the ones who, opposed pretty strongly the amendments that I was making last year. So I mean, that's quite frankly, I wasn't going to put myself in a crosshair over what I've seen as a losing battle in the past. That's part of why I didn't put in those amendments this year. But one thing I'd like to say about these amendments in particular is that, this was an increase that was approved by the legislature last year, signed by the county executive, this 2% increase, and people made life plans based on it. People planned their life around it. And again, a 2% salary, decrease for a county legislator, it's a good gesture, but that's all it is a gesture. It's like $280. The average salary, and I mean, I could be wrong about this and somebody can correct me, but I would think that the average salary in the management non-union section is in the 50s, 55-ish thousand dollars. And that might even be soft. The salary decrease to an individual there is five times that of what a salary of what the 2% decrease would be to a county legislator. So I respect the gesture that becomes Legislator Bartels, but I also think that, the gesture pales in comparison to what this is going to do to employees who have been working hard and have made life decisions and life plans based on their salary being at that level. I would definitely not support an increase for that group this year. But I can't understand how we would go back and take that away this year either.
Legislator Bartels.
Again, I recognize and respect that there's going to be differences of opinion on this. I thought it was important to bring up. And I think across this county, people are being asked to make tremendous sacrifice and people are struggling to get by. And I think this coming budget cycle is right now, even what we're looking at is an unknown. We don't know what state cuts are coming, et cetera. But I also do want to say that I fully recognize and acknowledge that the 2% cut to propose that I commit to take if this passes is symbolic and just a gesture. I don't think that there are legislators that do this job for the money. I recognize that it's a symbolic cut. And in fact, I do believe that that's a soft estimate. I think that most of the, when you factor in, part versus full-time, because there are part-time positions in this, I think that the median salary is higher than you suggested.
All right. Any other comments, questions? Legislator Bartels.
Sorry. And I did want to add that in looking into this and in considering the, again, our constituency at large in Ulster County, I believe that the median per capita salary is somewhere closer to 33, which this is a group that far exceeds that, and that the median household salary is somewhere around 69.
Okay, any other comments? All righty, then let's go ahead and move on. We did address title changes already in the prior discussion, so now we're moving on to Ulster County Community Action.
It's just so everybody knows, I had about 15 minutes I have to leave because I have to go pick up my grandchildren. So I think we can get through these, but I thought that, I would have been back for them, but anyway, if you don't mind, if we can move all of them at once, then I can run right through them.
Okay, so you want to make that motion?
I do.
Block them and move them all?
I'll second the block.
Okay. All in favor?
Thank you.
Go for it.
All right, the first one is Ulster County Community Action, and I will have to, have to reveal my wife sits on the board. She's actually takes my place on there, and there's one county executive. This is a tribe, I forget what they call it, but it's a tribe board that's made up. You have to have members from government on it, local government. There's one third of them has to be that. One third has to be from clients that actually receive benefits or receive items from Community Action, and the other third are community leaders and some sorts, other than government. All right, so this is the first. Community Action does a number of things with the money that we give them. They use it, some of it for food. Sometimes they use the money to help somebody pay a portion of their rent so they're not losing their apartment. Let everybody understand that they just don't give the money out like many do or may do. They are DSS approved to do the EED program. And as a result, what happens is they receive a lot of EED applications. And they, like I said, if they do the application, it's automatically accepted by DSS, and the EAP is given to them. So what they do is they make sure anything that they use, like for instance, for a benefit for a rent or something of that nature, they double check it to make sure that that person is actually doing it. And they're, in other words, they'll pay that little portion of that rent to keep them in. And if they've got, in other words, they're not going to throw the money out away, they want to make sure they're going to be able to pay the rent the following month. So that's part of it. Food, of course, is another part of it. They give out a great deal of food, and they'll buy some food when they're not able to get that through the food banks. And that would, not only that, it's also they do outreach, because they really go throughout the entire Ulster County. It is not a, although they're based in this, they have a spot in the city and in Ellenville, and I think in Island, but they do reach out outside those three areas. That's out. The next one is the Ulster County Library.
Wait, one moment. We have a question. Legislator Bartels.
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
That's okay.
Can I just ask for a clarification on the amendment? You know, it says that the executive
item recommendation is zero, and the adjusted item total is the 28.75, and I believe they got half that last year. So is it a net change of a positive 28.750, or can you explain it, Amber?
Amber.
Go ahead, Amber.
Thank you.
Thank you. The county executive recommended budget is equal to the 2020 adopted budget. So none of these non-county contract agencies are affecting any dollar value outside of the accounts that they're being placed in. So with the change and the adoption of the new non-county contract agency policy, none of the funds are assigned to anything. So these amendments kind of put the placeholder in based on that policy.
And can I just clarify? So the cuts that we made last year were savings to last year's budget, but they were budgeted at these numbers. Where we see zero, it's because they were budgeted at these numbers and the executive kept the budget line flat.
The line is kept flat. The zero is intended to say there's no item assignment.
And then the other zero is to say that there's no negative or positive implication in terms mm-hmm. of in this year's budget if it passes at this level.
Right.
Thank you.
Sorry, I really don't understand.
Well, for clarity, last year during the after COVID hit, we met and I of course did not agree with them, but we cut these agencies in half in many cases and from what they were going to get. So that's what happened. Now the new budget comes along and the county executive put the same amount of money in that fund that was in there the year before, the entire fund, and then we allocated it. That's something that has been done the last few budget cycles. Rather than the putting it in the particular spot, it actually started, Mike Hines started doing that. Rather than doing that, they put the fund in it and said to the legislature, there's the fund, you allocate it.
So this is just something we would have to do every year. This is not asking for more money, less money,
no.
It's just doing the allocation.
Nope, it's doing the allocation.
I got it. Okay. Now
and like I said, and the, of course, the, you know, the programs and the things that they hand out are, you know, predominantly going to minority populations.
And can I just ask, sorry, just for how this process works, not to say we wouldn't do this allocation, but what happens if you don't do the allocation? Then it just sort of sits there and not go, I don't, just to explain that part.
Well, it would go back into the budget.
It would be a savings.
It would be a savings. Legislator Bartels, do you have a question?
No, I was going to clarify that when Dave said we cut it last year, we cut it this year, this committee, we cut the funding this year. So
right, but it was from the last budget. That's what I meant. Right. It was from budgeted for 2020 back in 2019. And then, you know, okay. So anyway, that's that particular one. Anyone other questions on that?
Yes, Legislative Walter.
Sorry. Yeah, thank you. So this is at a rate that's equivalent to the full amount before we made any reductions.
Correct.
So, I mean, how would it work? Because our reductions that we did make related to the pandemic,
That would be that. In fact, I think I just signed the papers the other day. They're getting that from what we and this money they would get next year.
Yeah, no, I get it. But we're next year is just like 2 months ago from now, and we're still in the pandemic.
This year's number was 14,375.
Right. So I guess I wonder, and I'm not suggesting reducing these now or ever or advocating one way or another, but just sort of process. I mean, is it then conceivable then if there is a real spike and it's continuous that we might go back to these once again, like we did with the other ones and start going through each one? So this sort of puts it into the placeholder, but we could make a decision now or later about whether it should be any less for any individual one.
Well, what happens is, yes, because what happens is if we approve, just say we approve this at the budget and it shows up in the budget in that manner. Well, next year, when we still have to pass a resolution allocating the money the following year, and when we, you know, to enter into that contract, more or less. So when we enter into that contract, we have the opportunity to make those changes at that point, like we did there earlier this year. That's what we ended up doing. We made the changes because we felt that things were closing up, that they may not be able to get those. But my mind said at this point now, there is going to be needed more than ever this year and going into this winter and into this spring. I really do believe it's going to be needed more than ever. I think last year people, you know, did anchor in and do what they had to do, but more and more people are without, you know, losing jobs, and I think it's going to be needed more.
I'm sorry, can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
Is this the whole universe of the same exact programs that we're in, or did you make a decision not to include? Because I know some of them, like the bullying program, is not here. So,
right.
So you based it on the, can you just give it clarity as to which, I mean, I guess I could do my own work of looking back and forth.
Go ahead. What was submitted, and I did verify with the financial staff, what was submitted were those individuals that put in a request for 2021 and provided all the documentation, so they were vetted by the finance team. And so what you have before you are those individuals that asked for funding.
Great. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay.
Wait, I'm sorry. I have a clarification question.
They may have requested more or what have you, but what I did was I put the numbers in from the year before rather than adding any increases. I had Amber do it in that manner.
Can I ask a clarification question?
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. So, and it's probably a question for Amber or Natalie. So the one big number that the executive's budget put, does the addition of all these fully expend the executive's number, or because some organizations didn't ask, there's additional funds? What is the differential on the aggregate of all these if fully funded and the executive's recommendation in that line?
I don't know the answer to that off of the top of my head. It contains multiple account numbers, but I can certainly give that to the committee.
That would be great. Thank you. Okay.
Do you have a rough estimate, Amber?
Yes, right now. You can come back tomorrow.
You don't want to do that.
Financial.
Well,
they want to get down to the penny. All right. No, I understand, Amber.
I respect that.
That's what we pay you for. So like, for instance, I did put, the various ones in there. I'm going to have to leave because I have to go pick my grandchildren up by 2:45. I mean, I'd bring them right back here. So it would be a 20 minute break and I'll be back. How do you want to handle this? I mean, I had it set the way it was set up.
Thank you, Chairman. Why don't we go ahead and give everybody a 20-minute break, and then we'll sign back on. And this way, everyone can take a couple minutes to do what they need to do. And so it is 2:35 now, so we want to regroup at 2:50 or 3 o'clock?
Yeah, 2:55. You might make it 3 o'clock.
Let's make it 3 o'clock. So everybody gets a break, and we'll reconvene at 3 o'clock.
Alrighty,
we're ahead of schedule, so I think we do have plenty of time. So why don't we do that? Let's adjourn till 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Archer?
Here.
Ronk?
Present.
Bartels?
Here.
Gabaris?
Present.
There he is.
Payne? Okay. Here. Mayo? I see her box there, though. And Walter.
Here.
Okay.
And Donaldson.
Right. Okay, so we're good to go. So we are now on libraries. There was some information that Amber sent to everyone.
OK. can I ask a question about that information?
Absolutely.
I see included in it is the amendment for Sawkill. Is there a reason we're not doing it now? Is it because Donaldson didn't move it?
It's coming up tomorrow. Cahill has put that in.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I was just confused as to why we weren't doing them all together. That's all.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's tomorrow.
No worries.
Right, and just so everybody knows, the Ulster County Community Action and along with the People's Place, that is all. Dean Fabiano wanted his name to be added to that. I put these in more for a placeholder than anything because in other words, we weren't doing that. And I think because of the change in the budget and all the things that we've been doing, and then the changes in the committee, which hopefully will get changed back to where it was, because I really don't think that, the legislative program should be stripped that way. So I think it should be put back where it was, just like criminal justice, or just like public works and so on, things report to them. And then they recommend what to be done. And then it's up to the legislative body the Ways and Means Committee to look about it and see if we have the money for it. Anyway, so where was I? I was on the Library Associations. The Library Association, of course, as everybody, I think you probably know, it is a money that goes into the association, and the association buys various software programs and various programs that all libraries can tap into, and that you just need a library card. There's many programs, language programs, mechanic programs, and more people are actually beginning to depend on that. In fact, Clark Richter is the guy that called in the other day, depends on that for certain classes that he's taking. He's actually using the Library Association programs that ties him into those. And I think they may have supplied a list to the Ways and Means, did they not, when you interviewed with them, Lynn?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We have all their backup documentation. It's in the OneDrive. Everybody's got it.
Okay.
So can I just ask, Dave, because what you had stated earlier is a bit of a deviation from what we're seeing. You said you're using 2019 budget to move forward with these. And if I look at 2019 for libraries was $80,835, and for the previous one for Community Action, 2019 was $28,750. So I'm a little confused as what we're using. It seems like different organizations have different numbers than off of the 2019. So did I misunderstand what you were saying?
I don't know, Amber. Could you clear that up?
I think I can too, because it confused me as well. At first, but now I see that it's not using 2019's numbers. It's using 2021's requests, their full requests. And if you recall, some of the organization, in recognition of the extraordinary times we're in, asked for actually less than they asked for in 2020, knowing that we might. Because when I first saw that too, and thank you, Amber, that document's very, it's just helpful to see it all in one place.
Oh, I see. So this was their requested amount for 2021.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have my paperwork in front of me because it's in the other room, and I don't want to
disrupt everything.
Yeah.
You can't stay hidden then.
in each right. case, the full requested amount, despite the fact that, in some cases they requested less than they actually received requested in 2020.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Right, and then the next one is the UPAC. that I put in, you know, also for the placeholder there. And as you may have read in the paper the other day, UPAC is having some serious financial problems because they're not open. They're not able to have programs come in. And as a result, they are suffering. So, and this was a number that, you know, we had in the past from when it was sort of like an agreement that we had dealing with their electricity and helping them pay that. Of course, they do put on a number of programs that that are free for youth, and, you know, bringing youth into the theater, particularly the inner city youth in the city of Kingston. So they are open to do those types of things. The next is the Arts Mid-Hudson. Now, I know people say, well, we're in a pandemic and we can't be affording this. In reality, the small grants, which you know are put together with a panel of other artists, and the panel of artists are not wealthy artists by any means. And in fact, most, you know, the ones that get these small grants of $2,000 and such actually go to artists that are pretty struggling. And I tell you, I know a couple of them are, you know, are having trouble because they're not being able to sell their art because there's no place to sell it. And so some of these programs may help out in those, but it is an art program that no matter how you look at life, if you are throwing the art away, well, then you're throwing the culture away. So I believe that this is a small amount of money, you know, in order to keep these art programs running. And like I said, there's they help out with like Arts Mid Kingston, Woodstock, Allenville. They're all over the place where they grant these small funds, these small grants that they give out. Very small. They're like anywhere from one. I think the largest one is maybe $3,000. Now, I put the placeholder in for soil and water, but I would prefer if, Tracy, you talk on this. I put it in because it wasn't done.
Sure, sorry. Just had to check to see if the bus was here. I no longer sit on either the board or the environment committee, but I was at the environment committee when they presented, and this was their request for this year, but it is a substantial reduction over previous years. But they recognize the, again, the extraordinary situation that the county's in. So, I feel like most members of this committee over the course of time have been exposed to a lot of the work they do. They certainly leverage the county's dollars, similar to Cornell, to do millions of dollars of work, both in helping serve our farms and agriculture, and also in dealing with stream management, maintenance. Not, I mean, to name just a few of what they do. They do a lot of work in the watershed.
Right, and they have a fund balance that they're beginning to tap into, so that's why they were willing to take. You know, they requested less.
Didn't they get a grant as well?
Well, they get lots of money.
They get lots of grants.
New York.
Yeah, from the city, but right. I think they also have a new director, so. I mean, one thing I think that we should be thinking about is other ways that the county can partner with them, because, you know, the agency has lots of possibility in terms of the work that it can do in partnering with counties on things like MS4, and because they can go onto private property, et cetera, to deal with things which are their expertise where the county cannot. So moving forward, I think we'll have even more opportunities to partner. But yes, they did have some funds that weren't dedicated. I think they have been drawing those down, but it is important that the county maintain. I mean, the county needs to maintain contribution in terms of the organizing principle of the organization. So
It's definitely money well spent. It reminds me a lot of Cornell in terms of the way they leverage their funds.
Right. Now that leads us into Cornell, which of course they're in the situation where they're on the verge of laying some off, and of course that could be a problem for us in the end because it makes it more difficult for them to leverage money elsewhere, and they have no idea what's going to happen with the federal government and the state government. Because they're funded by us, they're funded by the state government, and they're funded by the federal government. The programs that then they get money from grants outside those by the programs that they do and by the leveraging the money, that the local money that we give. And most of you, many of you know a good deal about them. I don't think anybody knows totally all they do because they are really involved in many different things, particularly, you know, mostly a lot of farm assistance. They do that. They're actually assisting farmers, right? And one of the newer things, and I think Heidi was in the tour we went when they were talking about assisting getting the Hudson Valley as a new winery area and getting its own brand, its own, like for instance, the Willamette Valley in Oregon is Pinot Noir. And we're looking at it's Cabernet something, that's Cabernet. Do you remember which one it is, Heidi, that they're working on at this point?
Is it Sauvignon Blanc?
It's not Sauvignon Blanc. It's a type of a cab, but it's a different. I'm trying to remember exactly what it is, but I can't. But they're actually working on that. That's one of the things that they're working on right now. And it would become like, for instance, in Willamette Valley now, the Oregon winery, the Pinot Noir is actually known throughout the country and the world now. They've actually got to that point, and it was done by a very same process of really getting all the various farmers that grow grapes to grow this similar grape, and it becomes known over the Hudson Valley. But that's just a small piece of a recent one they've been doing. They do a lot of testing, soil testing. They do testing for farmers. They're the ones that track down when there's any type of a plight of any type of insects or whatever it may be. And they do that so they can save the farmers on, in other words, how they can battle themselves so they don't lose their crops. Cabernet Franc, yes, very good. Oh, yes.
Did you guys get samples?
No, we didn't actually, but I think we should demand that the next time. We'll have to bring John Barrett with us then if we're going to be drinking wine. And that goes on and on. They do so many things along with the youth items that they're doing. So those numbers are numbers that they use to leverage a great deal of money elsewhere. And in fact, some will argue that they are our best economic development agency. Because every one of those employees, the amount of money that we give them and the amount of employees that they have, the number of employees far outweigh the amount of money that we put in if you take a look at economic development as economic development engines. Now, I did put awareness in as a placeholder. I'm not sure who else wanted to go with that. I didn't get a call on that, but I did put that in.
They did not submit, did they?
Yeah, I think they did.
Okay.
Presented.
They did. That's right.
And the dispute resolution, of course, they're the ones that we're actually not paying them for dispute resolution. We're paying them for the CASA program. Because they took that over and they actually made it work better and they're able to handle more kids that are going in before courts. Anybody that don't know what that is, it's a court-appointed special advocate. So anybody, if you're going before family court and the child may have an, if they're going to be taken away or whatever they're going to happen, the court appoints one of them, and these are volunteers. And that volunteer has one child only. And that child, they run through them with the court system. They are responsible for the child, and that's who they advocate for, not the parent, not social services. And in fact, we had a little tiff with social services a few years ago. John could bear that out, and him and I had to kind of straighten the thing out, or help straighten it out anyway. They were up, social services were upset with one of the CASA workers. But that's what their job is to advocate for that kid and that kid only. And they follow them through the court system. Family of Woodstock, that's supervised visitation. We're actually mandated to do that. And I'm trying to get that out of this. This should be just in the executive's budget because we're mandated to do this. Non-custodial parent visitation, and if we didn't do it, we could have some serious lawsuits on our hands by not doing it. But I really think that they should, as I said before, it should be put in the executive's budget and just dealt with through there rather than us dealing with this. I don't know. You have any comment on that, Bert?
Chairman Donalds, I think we can accommodate, and I guess if you're looking to do that within this amendment, we would put it into the appropriate department if needed, in terms of moving it to the account, if that's what the committee would want.
Legislator Bartels?
Yeah, I just want to provide some clarification. It's my belief, based on talking to social services and to family, that this is not a mandated service. I'm not questioning whether or not it's an important service, but it's not mandated. We do the mandated service. This is in sort of marital disputes or where there's been a break and they cannot agree on who to get to visit. They're required to pay for the person to supervise the visitation. And many of these families probably can ill afford to pay. And so that's what this program covers, but it's not a mandated service. It's something that was decided to be important by the legislature years ago. And we've been funding regularly. I know when we talked to Mike Iaposi, he said that if Division of Social Services probably would not be the place for it to live. But so I think that this, like, we're kind of back to the same place of, having this is not something I think that should be moving through the legislature per se, because I think we should be having a conversation about who actually served and how important it is to have the program. And then I'd like to see it eventually in the executive's budget rather than our budget, but I'm not sure where it would go. So I feel like this probably deserves another follow-up.
Where did you get that it wasn't mandated? I was under the understanding that it was mandated.
I understood that from both Mike Iaposi and from Michael Berg. And again, not that it's not an important program, but that portion that is mandated, we would actually be covering. We do. This is different. This is something different.
And that came out last year when we were reviewing the adjustments with Mike Iaposi, because he came to Ways and Means. And then we had a subsequent conversation this year with Michael Berg about this. He kind of felt that it doesn't sit there. But I think, again, Iaposi was concerned about moving it there. So I'm not sure where it should go. I think that's what we need to determine. Where should this go? It's a valuable program, but it's not a mandated one.
So what you're saying, if a non-custodial parent is not able to see their child, We're not liable for that?
Well, and there's marital disputes. This group, go ahead.
Yeah, so my understanding of it, again, it's worthy talking to both Mr. Berg and Commissioner Iaposi on this, but my understanding is that, you know, these are circumstances where supervision is required, but it's on the parents to pay for supervision. In most cases, the supervision, nobody pays for supervision. In most cases, they agree on who could be the person supervising. But these are cases where they can't agree on who's going to be supervising for whatever reason. And they're, you know, maybe more difficult cases. And so in this case, family provides the supervision in terms of the visit, but they're compensated for providing that service. My understanding is we are not mandated to cover it. And that's how it came about becoming, it was something that the executive dropped from the budget years ago, and the legislature deemed it was important enough after speaking to Mr. Berg, the legislature deemed it was important enough to help facilitate these families to have supervision, because if you can't agree on who's going to supervise and you can't afford the supervision, which arguably is what might happen, to pay for it, then you might not get to see your child because you can't then just go without the supervision, if you can follow. So at some point in time, we, the legislature, agreed it was important to cover this and to be able to provide this service, but I do not believe that it's mandated.
And all right, we'll have to get that cleared up. I don't know, Bert, can you make some calls on that?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I can definitely do that. Not a problem.
All right, thank you.
Do you remember this program, Bert?
Yeah, and I do remember Legislator Bartels. We did remove it, and then the legislature did pick it up, and this was years ago. But I'll look, and I'll even kind of see what department it could be under, too, for the committee, just to, you know, I'll look at the contract and things like that. No problem.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Bert.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I could definitely talk to Commissioner Iaposi. He had very legitimate concerns about why it might not make sense to be in social services, because when parents hear that social services.
Yeah, he was going to be my first contact. Yeah.
The tenor. So.
Yeah.
Right.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And the last one, Chairman.
The last one is People's Place. They put in a request for the $10,000 for food. That's, you know, something that I think they're going to be utilizing it. And I understand that, you know, some people may argue that then we should do it with many of the others, because there are other places that do this. The difference is this is an inner city population, and it does cover a lot of people from not only Kingston, it covers, outside the city, it covers town of Ulster, East Opus. These people come in, actually some of you could come in from further out than that, to pick up a turkey, to pick up whatever that they're able to get through, the food bank. And they'll be using this to supplement that. And they haven't been doing the breakfast or the lunch thing that they used to do. But she requested this, she put this request in, and I believe it doesn't, I think it's a good request, and I think it's money well spent. And it also is really used disproportionately by the black and brown populations of our area, the very area that was brought up the other night about shootings, the very area I live in.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, so tomorrow we will have another set of amendments. They should be going out this afternoon. And so everybody's getting a little time back today. And, we'll see how it goes tomorrow as well. But next steps would be then on the next Tuesday at 7 o'clock, 4 o'clock, I believe.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. We will then be discussing these in detail and which ones can be supported and not. So everybody has all the information on this first group. You're going to get the information on the second, so I encourage you to get familiar with it so that we can have rich conversations next Tuesday. So anybody have any questions?
Just a quick question. I see on the legislative schedule that it says Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for these. Is that correct?
Well, we were going to have Friday, but Friday is no longer on the schedule because we didn't get as many amendments as we thought. We were just planning just in case. So we don't think we're going to need it.
free Friday. That's a beautiful
thing. There you go. Free Friday. All right. Any other questions?
I want to thank everybody for bearing with me, for me running away and having to pick up my 7 and 5 year old. And now they're in the other room playing with my wife and the dog.
Okay. Legislative parity. You have a question?
Yeah, I might. I absolutely enjoy the sincerity and the compassion that the Right Honorable Chairman has for the community, the programs that we're dealing with. But, you know, I can't help but recognize that the legislative programs, education and community services were taken. These programs were taken away from them. I admit last week or the week before that I didn't know the resolution was permanent. I also do recognize that there are many of the same groups in week after week or month after month or year after year. There's about 16 or 1700 non-for-profits in Ulster County. I'd like to know the matrix that y'all used when you solicited the non-for-profits to see if they might be interested in getting contributions from the county. I mean, I could think of a slew of them, from the Shadowland in Ellenville to the Kahungsan Rescue Squad, the Ashokan Campus, Mount Tremper Arts, Festival of Voice that brings opera to Ulster County. Are we doing due diligence the same that we would require of the executive's office if they want to go out and get bids for a job or buy a card to make sure that they have their specs written and they're getting the best price? I don't see how it could be the same groups. I appreciate the chairman's comments, but I look around, I see a lot of people that are in real trouble. They can't come to the legislature for a dole. I asked last year to have a matrix and a published matrix that would show from 0 to 10 who was dealing with the less fortunate and the misfortunate, and who or maybe have their own tax base or have their own list of contributors. Taking it away from the programs and legislative programs was, you might as well eviscerate the committee, get rid of it because you don't need it anymore. But I'd like to know if we've done due diligence with the other 1,600 non-for-profits in the county. How do they even know that there's money available? Thank you.
They for a point of information, they can apply for that. And I'll give you a couple of them. Actually, Shadowland has received money, but they received it through the arts. Archbishop Hudson, the Festival of the Voice was actually created through a grant from the Archbishop Hudson that we gave. And what they do, they have not requested money because they don't need it. What happened was we gave them the seed money. The arts group is actually what they attempt to do is give seed money to various groups. That's why you don't, if you look at who they give it to, they give it to various, they give it to different groups. There's very few that get it all the time. They have to create a capacity building. That's part of the program. Most of it has to be capacity building. So, for instance, the Festival of the Voice that you talked about, that was created, they got the grant. They got a grant, I think, 2 years in a row, and they have not needed a grant since then. They've raised their own money. That is one of the pushes that we have with the arts programs, is, and that was the push through the legislative programs. And that's, so I agree with you 100% that those things need to go back to legislative programs, because that's how we can, you weigh those, and that's how you create that matrix and change that matrix as time goes on. And like I said, the same thing happened with Shadowland. They were requesting a certain amount of money. It's a few years ago that they were given money, but it was given money for them to help build their website. And it went through the arts. And the purpose was...
You're right, but they've been closed the same as other places have. They might be hurt now. Have we?
Legislative Bartels? Legislative Bartels?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that I share many of Legislator Parity's concerns. You know, I think that, I mean, there are a couple standouts in terms of in this group. I think that we generally think of soil and water, which generally reports the environment, and Cornell Cooperative, which lately it's changed over the years, but reports, I believe, to economic development, sort of. I don't know. I'm not sure. But in years past, it reported the environment as well, in part. And
now cooperative reports did report to legislative programs.
Okay. So there are two big organizations that we regularly fund. But I share the concerns in that, from my perspective, we generally just repeat fund from the previous year. Most of these organizations I've seen in my entire tenure in the legislature. And, you know, I think that over time, you know, we have used this, and sometimes in years past, it's been to fill a gap that the executive budget might have created by letting something go, as we identified with the one, and then it stays in legislative programs. And in other cases, you know, it's led individual legislators bringing forward and identifying this did not happen this year.
That's not true. There was a notice that went out to all legislators about the change in the policy.
But you're stepping. I'm saying years past, and I don't think it happened this year, that individual legislators brought forward individual organizations from their community saying, here's this organization in my community, I'd like to see it funded. I'm not talking about the notice factor. I'm talking about that from my perspective in years past, this was often used as what, you know, you refer to in higher levels of government as member items. People would come and say, oh, I have this organization, like Legislator Parity said, you know, what about, you know, what's the difference between the pantry in my community versus the pantry in your community versus the People's Place versus, you know, the arts organization here versus the, and I personally have never brought something forward, but over the years, individual members have brought different things forward in their community because they're concerned about their community and to bring back money to their community. You know, in the long run, I think at least what I hope was trying to be accomplished by moving this into Ways and Means was to create, to eventually to get these things out of legislative programs. Like eventually I'd like to see these things go to their and stay in their appropriate committees and be adopted in the executive budget. I mean, I feel like I share the concerns, I have the same idea of like, who are we not funding and how do we make the determination that this one organization, again, not to ramble on, but I see a distinction in something like the libraries, which every community has, and what we're funding is spread equally, you know, across the county. And I also see a distinction in an opportunity to fill a short-term gap. But in terms of regular funding for the smaller organizations, I share a concern about what we capture and what we don't.
Chairman Donaldson.
The arts are also the same thing because it runs throughout. So that was put together with the arts. The way it was put together back in 2007 was to do away with the small funding of all these little organizations and create a one organization that covers the county and bringing panels of artists to make those decisions instead of us making those decisions. So we tried to take it out of the political realm and put it more in the art realm. But that covered, like the libraries, it covers the entire county. And the other one that, I mean, I can understand others come in, and they should come in, and we should sometimes maybe budget short term. The community action is another different aspect that in some ways, like Cornell, because they are the only recognized federal organization that does what they do. There are community actions throughout the country. And, most counties, if they either some small counties don't have them, like Sullivan County has recently been dissolved into Ulster County. So Ulster County also runs the Sullivan County end of it. So as a result, they're different than the others. I mean, the others are more local. But even though these people are all doing local stuff, they have a similar aspect in virtually every area, maybe not every county, but almost every county, like I pointed out. Ulster Community Action is throughout the country. In fact, the very people that we just went into an agreement are going into an agreement with Penrose. In their community building up in Schenectady, they have their local community action has a presence in that community building along with the Boys and Girls Club.
Legislator Walter.
Thank you. So I appreciate what Legislator Parody is saying. I have to say these same thoughts went through my mind. Again, recognizing how many different possible organizations and you know, I imagine that there's probably not anything we could do right now, but I do think that, and I don't know, Legislative Parity, if this matrix was formed yet or whether there's, you know, but I'd be personally interested in figuring out what kinds of priority areas we have going forward so that we not only know what kinds of programs we do want to fund, again, that idea of like, does it serve a larger audience? But also, how do we make sure? I mean, even if the information goes out, I don't know how we make sure that programs that may benefit from this funding really do know that they could apply. And that also might mean that we have to be really much more restrictive on how we pick, because if we open it up, then a lot of people will ask and then we'll have to make some hard decisions. But I think that's still a good thing. And so I think it's a great point, and I hope that we're not having the same conversation next year.
Legislator Criswell.
I just think I love this conversation, and I just also know that when you start doing that, you have to also be willing to do the work on the other end to make sure that they're doing the work that they say they're doing for the monies that you're giving them. So there's a whole follow-up piece that would have to be in place and systematized and all that stuff. So you just have to think about the whole process of granting monies that way.
Well, and I can say that today, between our two legislative financial analysts, that follow-up work is done as they go through the contract process. So they do follow up with that. So we do close the loop on that. So I think that's good. Legislator Haynes.
Yeah, I just want to speak to the fact that the way that we're doing it now, I share the same struggles as Legislator Walters did, you know, when I first came on, and I thought that this was going to be, you know, an improvement to the way it was dealt with in the past, but clearly there, you know, but I trust Chairman Donaldson when he says legislative programs, we really did gut that committee by moving it into Ways and Means, but I still don't think that this is a perfect system. And I think we should perhaps continue to have conversations where how this should best function. It's still not good enough yet.
Legislator Parody, you had a follow-up?
Well, just a quick one to Legislator Criswell. He was actually right. The follow-up is extremely important. Many times these things are dealing with distinction differences. They're not major differences between those asking for it, you know, and I really appreciate Dave's dedication to it. But there's others other than just the arts. I mean, there's adaptive programs out there. There's Special Olympic. They may be funded. They may not be. I just think I'd like to see the matrix where we're making the decisions from. And I've said enough for the day. I do thank you, Madam Chair, for your
patience. No, no, please. We appreciate your input.
And I have to go to work.
Gallagher.
Thank you. I was appointed by Mark Molinaro to serve on the Dutchess County Community Advisory Board, and very interesting process for the same type of programming that you're trying to fund here. There are legislative representatives on it, but it's also community-based, and it has representation from all the major funders, so the Community Foundation, Dyson, et cetera. And there is a very specific metric and criteria that are used that I think would satisfy legislative parities, you know, what he's speaking to. And I just think it would be interesting for you guys to take a look at it. I'm happy to share it, and maybe it's something after budget is done and kind of over the winter that you have a chance to absorb. But it does put out in a very public way exactly what the criteria are. There's like rankings that are done, and it is a little bit different in that it's not just legislative. It's put out under the executive budget. The board makes a set of recommendations back to the county executive, which he by and large adopts wholesale. So I just wanted to put that out there, and I'll be happy to share the materials. The matrix is interesting no matter whether you keep it executive or legislative. Thank you.
Legislator Bartels and then Walter.
Thank you. Yeah, it would be helpful to see that. I mean, one of the things that I struggle with in regard to this is when you talk about putting something out to the public and to all these organizations writ large, and you talk about having a matrix, it starts to sound very much like a grant process. And we're not allowed to give grants. We're not. That's just a fact. So we do this as a contract for services, you know, so we're, you know, in essence, we're saying these are services we really need. This is something that's absent currently in what we're budgeting. And therefore we're going to give this money. I think the grant concept is where then I start to go, well, I don't know. We struggle enough with our own budget. But, I mean, procedure, like, as we think through the arts and how we fund the arts, which is potentially, a very important component of this county, like, that's why we give the money to someone else to give out the grants. We can't give out the grants. Like, I don't know. I think this gets so messy. I agree with Legislator Haynes that we're definitely not there yet. I'm just being honest, it makes me very uncomfortable, but I know that these are, you know, there's some very important programs here. And again, I see right off the top, I feel like Cornell and Soil and Water are so different than what we're talking about. I mean, I don't know how we move forward.
Legislative Walters.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's one or the other. I think in some cases, there is a slippery slope to grant, but it also doesn't have to go that way. I mean, I think that just takes being careful about how we're doing it. But I just wanted to add that, so when all these programs are going to get cut, Legislator DeLong and I had long conversations with Dyson and Community Foundation and all those other groups. And we had, what did come out of it was, yes, they do grants, but they also support services and programs, and that they were very interested in working with us, recognizing that some of the same programs and services are supported across government and those organizations. So I just think, you know, I know that they are very open to having a conversation with us about how, and it also improves efficiencies, because it's important to know what are they supporting, what can't they support. It expands the services of those very important organizations. I mean, the arts, that's one funding agency, but it's a service agency at the same time, and so is Dyson in many ways. So I think it's just worth having that conversation with those groups.
Okay, anybody? Chairman Donaldson, that's okay. Chairman or Legislator Parity?
Well, I think the The problem is, I think we were starting to get to the process. We put in, there was a resolution that put in, but the resolution changed everything and sent everything to Ways and Means. And I really think that the legislative programs should be the ones that pick this up and run through that. And let's have that discussion in that committee. They're more of a policy-making committee. So they can actually work towards that to get the right type of matrix and to go out and do those types of things. I think we were close to that, starting to get towards that process. But then I think shifting it over to Ways and Means actually made it worse. Not that you're doing anything wrong, but Lynn, I don't mean that.
No, I know exactly.
But what happens is you know, you guys, you know, let's face reality. Ways and Means is, you know, the busiest committee there is. And the, you know, they're trying to get through so many things. And, you know, really, we have to start looking at the committee system generally a little differently, because, you know, we have, Public Works. They come up with things that they're going to spend the money on. And hopefully they weigh all the facts and weigh the cost of the money before it comes over the Ways and Means. So Ways and Means can more or less say, okay, not that they need to rubber stamp something, but to say, okay, is the money there? And is the money there? Does it fit into what the capital plan was? And so on. No different than, you know, going into criminal justice committee. You know, they come up with spending for the jail, spending for the sheriff's department and DA's office and so on. Well, that's what their job is. That they're part of that policy making. They're the ones that should come up with what has to be spent. And the Ways and Means should have a little less of the policy making part of that. You know, that's the way it should be. No different than when we take a look at laws and rules. When something passes, laws and rules really shouldn't be holding things up. When something passes, it should be holding it up if it doesn't fit legal muster, because the body as a whole should be voting on it, because it came out of that committee. And if it, particularly if it comes out of, if it comes out of the committee 4-3, then I guess maybe it's not as clear. But if you got a unanimous decision out of that committee, I really think it shouldn't be held up in laws and rules or Ways and Means. I mean, I think questions could be asked and answered and so on.
So Legislator Parity and then Criswell.
Okay, just thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quickly to Legislator Barthels. Not a grant? That sounds like a difference without a distinction to me. See what the public thinks. See what most of us legislative associates think. Madam Chair, I do thank you very much. I got to go to work.
Okay. Legislator Criswell.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I am working on an amendment to that resolution, which I'll present next month.
Legislator Barthels.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he can hear me anymore, but I agree with Legislator Parity. I agree that for many of these organizations, that's exactly what we're doing. So, and that's been my issue with it. Like, I think, you know, I think that there are exceptions. You know, Soil and Water has long reported to the environment. It's even in our committee description. So for as long as I've been on the legislature, Soil and Water representatives have been coming to the Environment Committee, and they used to come every month and report out what they were doing. So, and Cornell Cooperative was reporting to legislative programs. I think there's an argument for Cornell Cooperative, particularly given the work they're doing now, to be reporting to environment and or economic development as it relates to planning and the college resources. But these are all, like, again, I think we have bigger kind of structural discussions to be had about how we deal with this as a whole. Because I agree we are not there yet.
Okay. Any other comments? Any new or old business? Okay. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00. Oh, are you waving goodbye, Legislator Walter? Okay. All right. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you. Second? Thank you, everyone. All righty. Take care.